Today, first-time buyer deposit scheme, fish or fowl? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. I've received a load of questions from our viewers relating to the now available government's First Home Loan Deposit Scheme, or FHLDS. So today I want to look at the bones of the scheme and highlight both its features and benefits and potential risks. Now, it's not the easiest scheme to understand. It's completely different from, for example, how an exemption from stamp duty or a $10,000 grant works. So it's really important to understand what you're doing. And I should declare my bias, as all the research from here and around the world shows that such schemes and first-time buyer incentives in general tend to make prices rise and therefore make housing affordability worse. And it's really a sticking plaster solution to a much deeper housing affordability problem. And you might want to watch my recent show, Should I Buy Now?, where I discuss the fact that buying a home for shelter and security is often wise, even when prices are not rising much, whereas investors need to be much more careful. The scheme, of course, was a late election promise when ScoMo, at the behest of the property sector, announced if elected, they would bring in a deposit scheme, which, by the way, is modelled to some extent on the UK experiment from a few years ago. And that promise is now being delivered under the National Housing Finance and Investment Corporation, or NHFIC, a corporate Commonwealth entity responsible for the Affordable Housing Bond Aggregator, National Housing Infrastructure Facility, and the First Home Loan Deposit Scheme. All these schemes have the potential to impact housing affordability, at least at the margin. Since starting on the 1st of January, the banks have registered around 3,000 potential first home buyers under the First Home Loan Deposit Scheme, CBA and NAB, who are now lending, and a host of smaller lenders later. In fact, the remaining 7,000 scheme places for the current financial year will be available from the 1st of February 2020, when potential applicants will have a panel of 27 lenders to choose from. The panel includes two large lenders, and the full list is on the FHLDS website. And mortgage brokers will also be able to assist in finding loans from the list, though often the best rates are obtained by going direct to a lender and negotiating hard. The NHFIC is releasing 10,000 First Home Loan Deposit Scheme guarantees this financial year, and another 10,000 places will be available from July 2020. Now, 10,000 guarantees represents a small proportion of total first home buyer grants demand. For example, last October, 10,850 new first home buyer loan commitments were made. And there is a considerable amount of information available on the FHLDS website, and I'll put a link below, but here are the main points. The scheme is open to singles or couples. So if you're intending to be named as a borrower in your home loan with someone else who is not also your spouse or de facto partner, and whether that is under a home loan that only has two borrowers or has three or more borrowers, even if one of those other borrowers is also your spouse or de facto partner, then the home loan will not be eligible for the deposit guarantee. So, for example, a loan arrangement with a relative, such as with a sibling, will not be eligible for the scheme. And there are a range of eligibility criteria, including an income test, a prior property ownership test, a citizenship test, a minimum age test, a deposit requirement, and an owner-occupied requirement. And this is all in addition to the standard income and serviceability tests for mortgages, so this is not straightforward. And if you don't satisfy any of these checks, then the scheme is not for you. The scheme includes an income test for singles. Your taxable income for the previous financial year must not be more than $125,000. And for couples, your combined taxable income for the previous income year must not be more than $200,000. This will be based on data from the ATO, so you will need to provide a copy of your notice of assessment from the ATO for the 2018-19 financial year to any participating lender you apply for a scheme place with. And that's true up to the 30th of June 2020. An individual on $125,000 a year sits above the 80th percentile of full-time workers' wages in Australia. And the median pre-tax income for an individual in Australia is around $78,000. So this is going to help a select few, in my view. The scheme is only in place to assist genuine first home buyers. The property ownership test requires you to not have ever owned a freehold interest in real property in Australia or an interest in a lease of land in Australia with a term of 50 years or more, or a company title interest in land in Australia. And these tests apply for property interests in all states and territories of Australia, regardless of whether the property was commercial property, an investment, or unoccupied property, and whether it was ever lived in. If either of you, whether individual or with someone else, have held any interest of those listed, as a couple, you are not eligible for the first home buyer scheme. For your home loan to be covered by the scheme, you will need to make a statutory declaration that confirms that you've not held any interests of this kind. And this declaration is made under the first home buyer declaration provided to you by the participating lender. The scheme is only open to current Australian citizens. The citizenship test for you being an eligible first home buyer for the scheme is that you will need to be an Australian citizen at the time you enter into a home loan with your participating lender. If you're applying under the scheme as part of a couple, then you will both need to be Australian citizens. The scheme is not open to permanent residents who are not Australian citizens. And the scheme is only open to persons that are 18 years of age or over. The minimum age test requires you to be 18 years of age or over at the time you enter into a home loan with your participating lender. And there is a minimum deposit requirement for the scheme. The scheme is to assist singles and couples together who have at least a 5% value saved as a deposit. If you have 20% or more saved, then your home loan will not be covered by the scheme. The scheme is provided to assist Australians to purchase their first home for owner occupation. Investment properties are not being supported by the scheme. To meet this requirement, you will need to move into the property within 6 months from the date of settlement, or if later, the date an occupying certificate is issued, and continue to live in that property for as long as your home loan has a guarantee under the scheme. If you don't live in your property, including when you move out of the property at a later time, your home loan will cease to be guaranteed by the scheme. In these circumstances, there may be terms and conditions of your home loan that require you to take certain actions, including that you may need to pay fees and charges and/or take out insurance that would not have otherwise applied if your home loan was participating under the scheme. For a property to be eligible for the scheme, it must be a residential property, either an established dwelling or a new built dwelling that is purchased under a house and land package, a land and separate contract to build a home, or an off-the-plan arrangement that is financed under an eligible loan from a participating lender. There are purchase price caps depending on the location. For example, in Sydney and Newcastle, the maximum amount somebody can borrow is $700,000, whereas in many regional centres, it decreases to $450,000. The capital city price caps will apply to large regional centres with a population of over 250,000 people. For example, the Gold Coast, Newcastle and Lake Macquarie, the Sunshine Coast, the Illawarra and Geelong. Recognising that dwellings in large regional centres tend to be significantly more expensive than other regional areas. The FHLDS website includes a lookup facility to obtain the eligible figure for a specific location. The loan must be secured by a registered first-ranking mortgage over the eligible property, have no other registered owners at the time of settlement other than the eligible borrowers, have 100% of the loan drawdown proceeds used for the purchase or towards the purchase and improvement or construction of the eligible property, have a loan amount commitment not less than 80% and not more than 95% of the relevant value of the property, have a loan term of 30 years or less, require regular principal and interest loan repayments. An exception to this will be a grant during the construction of a new dwelling, whereby lenders will be able to allow borrowers to make interest-only repayments for the period in which the dwelling is being constructed until it can be occupied by the borrower. You cannot change the loan term, such as increasing the limit, though the loan may comprise more than one tranche, for example, fixed and variable loan tranches. You can also use other incentive schemes, such as stamp duty relief, or indeed cash incentive payments, alongside the deposit guarantee if they exist. The scheme stipulates that the interest rate should be no higher than the loan out of the scheme. But frankly, given the lack of transparency about mortgage rates compared with the advertised rate, this will be very hard to police. If you are intending to construct a dwelling on vacant land, your home loan must finance both the acquisition of the land and construction of a dwelling. And if you're intending to purchase land where a dwelling is not affixed and you are not also using your home loan to construct a dwelling, this means your home loan is not eligible for the scheme. Prospective purchasers under this scheme need to be careful that they're not getting in over their heads. People that borrow with a wafer-thin deposit might get into the property market faster, but they're likely to make higher monthly repayments and shell out tens of thousands of extra interest over the life of the loan. In addition, there is no guarantee that prices will rise ahead. We are in a different environment today compared with, say, a decade ago. Rate City research shows that while a person buying a $500,000 property with a 5% deposit rather than a 20% deposit would need $75,000 less initially, their monthly mortgage repayments would be $329 more a month. So over the next 30 years, they'd pay the bank an extra $43,546 in interest. And according to the most recent APRA quarterly property exposure statistics, just 7.35% of new loans settled in the September quarter had an LVR of over 90%, meaning a less than 10% deposit. And they have been actively asking the banks to think very carefully about approving loans to people with small deposits, yet now the government is actively encouraging it. The serviceability of the loan will be calculated on the mortgage amount, the same as any other loan. And banks are pretty strict these days on checking both income and expenditure, whether the borrower has a $100,000 deposit or a 5% deposit. The servicing is worked out the same. The borrower must be able to make their repayments to ensure that the loan is not unsuitable. The price caps may limit choice in some locations, but in effect will get someone into a reasonable first home that will be affordable for them, rather than allowing first home buyers to buy expensive properties where they might be struggling later to make repayments. You can also avoid the lender's mortgage insurance premium, which can often be a big hurdle. Now, CoreLogic did some modelling on the scheme and show that under the FHLDS, high income earners are being offered the same advantage as lower income earners. The scheme may actually provide more advantage to those earning towards the top of the threshold. That is because they can save a 5% deposit more quickly, and the scheme is currently, of course, limited to 10,000 guarantees a year, awarded on a first-in, first-served basis. And their analysis shows that the amount of time needed to save a 5% deposit based on different level of incomes. It is based on a median value dwelling in Australia at September 2019. That was $540,974. It assumes a saving rate of 20% of after-tax income in a savings account with a deposit rate of 1.5% per annum. With an income of $125,000, it takes 1.5 years to save a 5% deposit. A median earner at $78,000 takes 2 years and 3 months. And a relatively low income earner at $48,100 may take over 3 years. The FHLDS could be useful to those who can access it, even though a mortgage with a deposit of 5% costs more in interest than a 20% loan. That high interest cost could be less than what is spent on rent during the time taken to save. And paying more interest on a low deposit loan also makes sense if property values are going up. By accessing a property sooner, the asset has longer to accumulate capital growth that might outweigh the higher level of interest paid, but then property prices may not rise. But introducing a high income threshold for a program with limited numbers could make it more aggressive. Importantly, lower income households are less likely to own a home than high income earners. Ownership rates in the highest gross income quintile of households was over 80% in 2013, compared with about 55% amid the lowest quintile. Improving home ownership in Australia may need more progressive policies. The FHLDS in its current state risks awarding home ownership to those who may have otherwise attained it in any case in time. And the other point to note is that in the UK, where there was a somewhat similar scheme launched some time ago, most first-time buyers have seen no capital growth in the value of their property, and so many find it difficult to switch to other cheaper loans. As a result, you can get locked in. So the winners in this scheme are the banks, who get to lend more and reap bigger interest payments from borrowers within the scheme. And they also benefit from the fact that APRA allows their capital to be calculated at 80%, not 95%, which effectively reduces their costs. Developers win because the scheme will help to mop up some of the lower priced property which has been built to target property investors, but which is now are unsaleable. First-time buyers are being encouraged to fill their shoes. Individual homeowners may get into the property market more quickly, but this will tend to focus on those with bigger incomes. This does nothing to address the core underlying housing affordability issues. And there are downsides. Some property prices may rise as a result of the incentives, as is often the case. Those not eligible for the scheme may see affordability worsen, therefore. Lenders, mortgage insurers may see the volume of new business fall, and those who use the scheme might find that their property does not rise in value ahead and may therefore be locked into mortgage rates which do not remain competitive. So my advice is simply research this scheme well, do your sums, and make sure that you fit the requirements of the scheme. But for many households, the better option is still to wait, save more, and buy later. The chances are that home prices will not be growing that fast ahead given the current economic conditions, flat incomes and rising costs. So this scheme is certainly not a silver bullet solution for housing affordability. That would require a bunch of new thinking and a change in policy direction, which at the moment seems off the page. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.